You know, when it comes to wireless carriers, sometimes what you see isn't always what you get, except with Visible. With Visible, what you see is exactly what you get. If you haven't heard of Visible, well, now you have. They're the wireless carrier that's making wireless visible. It's in the name. With Visible, there are no hidden fees, no fine print, no hassle, nothing to hide. It's just $25 a month, all taxes and fees included. And you don't need more than one line of wireless to save. You can save on a line all to yourself with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. And again, just $25 a month. The future of wireless is here, and it is transparent. If you want more transparency in your wireless plan, you want to be on the Visible plan. Switch to Visible today and save at Visible.com. That's Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com. This episode of GameScoop is sponsored by Squarespace. If you're looking for a way to make your business stand out and succeed online, Squarespace is the all-in-one website platform for you. They take the stress out of creating an awesome website, engaging with your audience, and selling anything from products to content to time, so you're able to focus on, you know, everything else. In other words, you'll have more time for gaming. With the new guided design system, you can choose from curated layouts and styling options to build a unique online presence from the ground up, optimized for every device. And with Squarespace's integrated, optimized SEO tools, you'll show up more often to more people. Squarespace doesn't just make things easier for you. Checkout for your customers is made seamless with simple but powerful payment tools that allow you to accept credit cards, PayPal, and Apple Pay, and in eligible countries, offer the option to buy now and pay later with Afterpay and Clearpay. So whether you're just starting out or looking to expand your existing brand, be sure to visit squarespace.com for a free trial, and when you're ready to launch, go to squarespace.com/gamescoop to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain. That's squarespace.com/gamescoop for 10% off. What's up, everybody? Welcome to IGN GameScoop. I'm your host, Damon Hatfield, the real Damon Hatfield. And joining me this week is Tina Amini.
Hi, everybody. Hopefully my mic is better.
Sounds better. The real Justin Davis.
Scoop.
And Sam Claiborne.
We can see the mic, so it must be better.
Exactly. That's key here.
It's a visual aid. And we've got a great show for you this week. We're going to talk a lot about Ghosts of Tsushima, which three-fourths of us have been playing. We're going to talk about how younger gamers approach 20 questions a little bit differently than we're used to. But first, surprise topic. But first, I have to show off my new Godzilla shirt. I think it's cool. It's the movie poster for Godzilla versus Space Godzilla.
Okay. Who won?
Do you even have to ask? And then the bottom half is all tie-dye.
What's HUF?
Yeah, I was wondering what was happening with the sleeve situation.
It's a skate brand, so they have like a partnership with Toho to do a line of Godzilla stuff.
The bottom half of the whole thing is tie-dye?
And
the
sleeve.
Yeah.
Okay. I thought you were wearing like a tie-dye long sleeve shirt under it, but now I see.
Did you know that tie-dye clothing has become quite the trend in the quarantine?
Oh, it has. Kingo's wearing a whole tie-dye outfit today.
Ooh, now I gotta see.
I have a friend who started an Instagram just with, you know, tie-dye stuff recently, and I was like, still looks like tie-dye.
Tina, it looks like the paintings behind you.
It does. That's right. Yeah. Yep. What a nice collaboration we have here.
Okay. That's enough nonsense. Let's get down to business.
But that'll get people to turn into the video episode. That compelling gold content.
That's how Damon transitions every segment in GameScoop.
Talking about his clothing options.
That's nonsense.
He says that to me just during the day frequently.
Mm-hmm. It's true.
Yeah, because Sam is only communicating in edited video game over screens now.
That's the real thing I've been doing. There's a generator that generates game ending screens, but you can put in your own text.
Yeah.
And that is my only form of communication I've settled on.
Ooh, yeah, Damon, I think you need to do transitionary topics on Scoop from now on using those as like nice visual aids.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
We'll see. Just write the
for the hat. We still have the hat as a backup.
That's true.
Always have the hat. Okay, let's talk about what we've been playing. I know at least Sam and Tina and I have been playing Ghost of Tsushima. Just the review, or IGN's review came out this week. Got a 9 from Mitchell, and everybody seems to be really, really enjoying it. I know I am. Is that also true for both of you?
It is hands down, like, gotta be the most gorgeous game I've ever played.
It's very pretty.
It's very pretty. I mean, there's just, there's fireflies everywhere. Oh, there are like little butterflies flapping around. The attention to detail is amazing. But like, even when you're walking over yellow, like yellow leaves from, from like falling from the trees, you can see they're like sweeping up behind you and they go faster as you run faster. It's just, it really is amazing to look at. Sam and I were talking about this at some point off Scoop. And Sam mentioned like, it's such a bummer when it's nighttime because you don't get to see all of this like loveliness in all its glory. But yeah,
the thunderstorms are really cool, but yes, a sunny day really, really makes things amazing in that game. And then there's these moments where you're like, I mean, they set, when you go into a story, they set the time for that. And that's, I think, like a trick they're using, because sometimes you're like in the Golden Forest area and everything's like autumn looking, because, you know, it's like all seasons at once in that game somehow. And the sun is like as big as the screen, just gold, and everything is silhouetted in it. It's just like, it's unbelievable, but it's still an open world game. And that'll just happen naturally while you're moving around. But yeah, it's like the thing with, that Breath of the Wild did, which I thought was really cool, which it does well, is the wind. Like when you're in these grassy plains, the wind looks amazing sweeping through them. And there's giant fields of flowers. And you keep on thinking like, oh, that's probably going to be the most beautiful place in the game. And then they one up it with like another field of flowers that has some like cool rocks in it or something. Or they have like a swarm of like starlings that is the most realistic depiction of a swarm of birds I've ever seen in games in any way. It just looks incredible.
You know what's cool? All three of those elements that you mentioned are also gameplay elements. The birds, the flowers, and the wind.
The wind, I actually really like that they use the wind to tell you where to go.
Yeah.
It's a really cool mechanic.
Yeah, it's really windy in my Tsushima, though, because I'm just constantly like, wait, what direction? Oh, wait, am I going the right way? Wait, how's it going?
Yeah, my hair is a total mess in the game. It's just miserable. It should be a nice summer, fall, maybe autumn or spring day, but it's just a little bit chilly because of that wind.
Exactly.
Yeah, I'm playing it coming off of Last of Us Part Two, so it's a little bit interesting, playing those games one after the other, because Last of Us Part Two was really like shooting for the stars and trying to do something different, give you an original experience, play with the way narratives work in games, play with your expectations, trying to do all this new stuff. Whereas Ghost of Tsushima, I feel like, is just a very traditional open world action game, which isn't a knock against it at all. I just feel like it's like the AAA open world action game refined to perfection.
Yeah, it's honestly the breath of fresh air that I was hoping for following The Last of Us. Exactly, that kind of air. Thank you.
Breath of fresh wind.
Breath of fresh wind. Because, I mean, aside from all the stuff about like The Last of Us being this really like dark and brutal world that depicts humanity in such a like depressing perspective, Ghost of Tsushima is pretty much the opposite of that in a lot of ways. But I like, I'm going really slowly through the main story beats, actually, because I love the side quests. And the side quests all give you something different, level you up in different ways, or you can get legendary armor and weapons with some of the specific side quests. So I just love, like, being in the world and spending as much time as possible searching everywhere and, like, looking for all the little elements of the story that are living in these tiny pockets, as opposed to The Last of Us, which is just this, like, grand, big cinematic experience. Also, though, you use triangle really dominantly in The Last of Us for, like, access points, like opening doors or whatever. And then in Ghost of Tsushima, you have to use R2. So I have definitely accidentally hacked the hell out of my poor horse trying to mount it.
which horse did you pick?
Or jumped off the horse.
I picked the white horse, and I named him Nobu for trust.
There are, like, three horses that you get to choose from.
I have a black horse named Kage.
That's exactly what I have.
How cute.
I aside from the beauty of the game, I think there's a little bit of like what Damon was saying, like what's an open world RPG that it's going for. Like, it is trying to, it's more like Assassin's Creed than anything else, but I personally like it better than Assassin's Creed. I think it's like because I like the sword combat where I'm at now, it's been frustrating for a very long time, but now I have like these multiple stances I'm switching through and it's really fun. I found the way that I like to play, which is rolling a lot and dodging instead of parrying, which I just suck at. I'm just so bad at that. And I'm bad at that in fighting games too. I always knew, like, I'd play friends and once they got good at blocking in like Street Fighter 2, I'd be like, well, I can't play anymore. I just don't like
blocking. I'm out.
I just don't like it. It's not my thing. And so I've never been good at it. So there's that. And but like I'm in a place now where all I do is just do like exploration, and I'm just uncovering the whole map. And that's like that's all I want to do. I want to see the crazy like fantasy environments that they built that are just artistic and cool. I get a little bit annoyed with the side quests; they're a little boring. And then the main quests are just like they're fine. And I just really like the world. But that's enough for me for this game. I'd recommend it just based on that alone.
Yeah, I'm super enjoying it. Actually, I have a couple of questions about the game that maybe you two can help. How often should I be changing my stance?
Yeah, so you're going to get four stances.
Right now I have two.
Yeah, and so the one you just got is super helpful because it blocks, or it gets you to counter shield guys, right?
Yeah.
And you get a spear counter, and then you get a big guy counter, like the heavies. And so like you're just doing it all the time because you're in a crowd and you're just like, okay, take care of the shield guys, the other guys prepping an attack, switch to your spear, hack them. But before you do any upgrading and all that, and I would do a bunch of side questing and just upgrade your katana a lot. Like if it's really strong, then those make more sense because you have time to kill the enemy instead of like doing a little damage and then having to switch over again while the enemy recovers because somebody stabs you from the side.
Hmm. Okay.
Yeah, I'm a little biased because I like the water stance quite a bit because I feel like so the water stance is for shielded enemies. You're right, and then the wind stance is for enemies with spears. But I find that the water stance works perfectly well against them too.
And I noticed that too.
I like really prefer my system where I hold triangle to do my heavy. And then I do the triangle and circle one that I forget what it's called.
Yeah, there's like a special attack that uses a thing that just kind of breaks their defense. You'll get it in a little bit.
Yeah, and that goes with for the spear breakers too. So I find it pretty effective and I've been pretty dominant with just the water stance.
With the spear stance, you can unlock the best thing, which is kicking people, which means you can lead people to the top of cliffs and kick them off, which is, of course, the best Assassin's Creed move. It's so funny to do that.
My other question is there any way to recover from bleeding out?
Yeah, you have to upgrade for that one.
Okay.
But honestly, I spent so much of my skill upgrades on resolve and health, and then separately on armor too, that like I decided it would be a waste of a skill point. I'll save it for last. Especially when they force you to put skill points in those damn ghost weapons. I only want two out of the four.
Justin, is Tsushima on your two playlist?
Yeah. I just wanted to be clear that like I'm only not speaking up because I didn't get one of the staff copies. I'm going to be buying it and playing it along with the public. I, you know, love Assassin's Creed games, and I really like the feedback that this is in some ways more Assassin's Creed-y than, you know, even Odyssey was, although I do love Odyssey for what it is, too. So have it preloaded. Really, really excited to play, but just haven't had a chance to dive into it yet.
Yeah, it is.
Would you say it's on your Sue playlist?
Oh, my God.
All right, Justin, are you looking for mostly going stealth or are you going full samurai approach?
I'll be a stealth boy for sure. Yeah.
I feel like there's less of an emphasis on stealth than we were led to believe. I don't know if Tina would agree.
Yeah, so that's why I was asking because actually, even aside from the emphasis, well, first off, they kind of actively discourage you from it, just kind of culturally speaking, based on the fact that you're a samurai and like all of your learning.
It's dishonorable.
Exactly. So I do wonder if someone can play without, because so far nothing has necessitated. No, there's one mission so far that necessitated stealth, actually. But you don't have to kill anybody in it. You just have to get to a thing without raising an alarm. So I wonder if you never stealth assassin somebody, if like, because there are narrative moments where you reflect and you're really like ashamed about it. So I wonder if you never do that, if you never get those reflective moments, because the game is kind of like, you shouldn't be doing this. Yeah. But also it's just kind of finicky.
There's whole like quest systems later where you get other weapons, like, you know, that have like poison type things involved with them. And that's like even more dishonorable. Yeah. And so like, it is funny. There are like story beats that are part of it, but like, I would like to, you know, what's the full honor playthrough? I think that's like a really fun way to play that game if you wanted to play it that way. But it means you like have to like have a standoff. Like you go to the front gate of somewhere and then you use this standoff chain thing where you can kill a bunch of the enemies right up front, but you're still gonna have a long fight.
So I'm gonna I'm excited to play it, and I'm gonna probably start tonight, I guess. Wow. I didn't quite like the week's gotten away from me. But this might be the last big game I play on the old consoles, and like the temptation to just wait, like even if like next gen upgrade, like I'm not expecting some like 4K version of Ghosts, but like the temptation to wait till PS5 is like getting stronger every day. So it's like, yeah. I don't know, it's July. Like this might be the last big one for me.
Yeah, it actually, it's the rare game that makes good use of the DualShock 4's touchpad.
Because
they use that for the wind. You swipe up to make the wind blow and show you where you're going. But there's also different things happen if you swipe left or right.
You play the flute if you swipe left.
That's right.
You bow if you swipe down.
Those sound made up.
I know, yeah. Nope. So ever since Pear told us that if you bow at things, like strange things happen, I've been bowing at so many things. Nothing's happened yet. He was like,
I didn't know that.
Come out of this one statue. So I've been expecting like a grand reveal, but nothing so far.
The only one that I found is the frog one after he told me about it. And it was crazy. There was like a stone frog and you go up and you do that. And then like, it just goes ribbit. And like all these frogs just appear out of nowhere. So that's kind of cool. There's kind of fantasy elements because like the world is like fantastical, but also like grounded in nature. But like, you know, it's fantastic. It's just more beautiful than any nature, you know? And so like, there's things like that, which have like just edging on, you know, like there's usually, it's funny because the character is all about like an explanation for everything. So like usually the character is like, there's no ghosts in the forest. Let me go check it out. Like that's the plot of like so many parts of that game. But then sometimes like frogs hop out of like, you know, the ether and tackle you. And so I don't know what his explanation for that is.
Not to make this podcast entirely about Ghost of Tsushima. But one other thought that I had was it's such a nice reprieve. Like we talked about The Last of Us as kind of like, I think maybe the first big game since we went into quarantine.
Yeah.
And so I was like, oh, like a weirdly timed game to be playing in this kind of environment. But Ghost of Tsushima is so vastly different. Like, obviously, there are some dark themes. There are some dark characters and some struggles that you have. But given how gorgeous it is and how like powerful you feel, it's the perfect kind of game right now. It feels great to like end the workday and just roll right into playing that game.
Yeah,
and I know we don't want to talk about single games all day, but if you want to hear Tina talk about a game for an hour and a half, her and Michael Swaim did a podcast about Last of Us. It's really good.
Yeah, it was fun.
Check out. It's called One Upsmanship, and it was, I think, from last week, and it was a great listen.
Thanks, Sam.
Yeah,
cool. Justin, what have you been playing while you wait for a ghost?
It's some weird stuff. No, my daughter is six. I always have like weird answers when we go over what we're playing. I play all the normal AAA games, but like it's always off cycle.
Someone needs to represent.
My daughter's six, and you know, for as much as video games are a part of my life, they're actually not a huge part of her life because we don't do a lot of screen time. And even when we did try to play video games, she couldn't quite handle the controls or like understanding where to go or what to do, or just, you know, wasn't really quite old enough yet. And I'm not trying to push it on her, but something has clicked and she got really, really into Mario Odyssey. And so her and I played through the whole game. She beat it last week. So the first video game she beat, and I took a cute video and the credits were rolling.
Awesome.
Did you use the assist mode? Is that like the key to this?
Yeah. The assist mode is great. Even with assist mode, so Mario Odyssey is incredible. It's a 10 out of 10 game, but it's actually not very 6-year-old friendly. Like there's a lot of reading and that game's kind of a puzzle game. Like you have to figure out like the little trick. I was trying to explain to her. I'm like, explore suspicious areas. And if you see something that's suspicious, like try to throw your hat at it or like, you know, stomp Mario. But like, it's not like a running left or right game. And so once she got over that hump, she had a lot of fun.
Do you just like over your shoulder be like, did you throw your hat at it? And she's like, oh, yeah, okay, I'll try that.
And then by the end, when I say she beat it, like I think I did the entire end. It's too, you know, it's too intense and too much. But like her and I went through it together and it was very wholesome and cute.
Yeah. The ending segment is where Bowser's like running after you and breaking a bunch of stuff.
Yeah. The Bowser fight. And even before that, you go through Bowser's Kingdom. And then playing through it with her, that made me want to replay it because that game has 880 power moons in it. And like, I got however many.
That's crazy that it's not an even number. I hate that.
Yeah. I think I collected like 600 when the game came out. And so I started it over and I'm going to try to 100% it. I think I'm at 800 moons now.
Wow.
So I'm getting there. That's what I've been playing in my off hours. So I played through it twice with her and by myself.
Wow.
Be a pro.
And she like, not to get like too personal, but I think like a lot of kids, she sort of gets in this mood of like, I can't do it. Like she's learning to read and learning to write. And she's like, this is hard for me. I don't know what to do. I can't do it, and gets frustrated. And Mario has actually been really good. It's helping build up her confidence. I'm like, you know, this is hard and scared. Like the bosses are intimidating even if mechanically they're not that hard, like they're shouting at you and it's spooky and scary. And like her building up her confidence of like, I can do this and I can win. And it's been really interesting to see that sort of transfer over into like, I feel like she has more confidence in other parts of her life now that she's like able to overcome these tricky challenges in a video game. So it's been really cool. I'm not exactly sure. We have Overcooked. So I was thinking about trying that.
Yeah.
If you want to just kind of take down the bonding level you've had a few matches.
Green matter. You're not chopping up that lettuce fast enough. The what's next question is, I'm not sure because she's asking me that too. Like, what should we play next? I'm like, I don't know. I need to think about it.
What about Mario World?
Well, we have new Super Mario Brothers on the Switch too. So, you know, we might show her a 2D Mario next. I don't know what she would think about Mario World. Maybe I'll try that.
I was going to say Mario Party should be on the list. Maybe an eventual one.
That's good.
When they're both old enough. And then there's a real family breaking.
Yeah, she plays. She also plays a lot of Ring Fit. And she's the farthest. Everyone in my house plays Ring Fit. And she's the farthest one along. And her favorite thing to do is to like mosey in and be like, oh yeah, I already did that. I'm already like two lands ahead of you, Dad. I'm like, okay.
Okay.
So yeah, that's mainly what I've been playing. I also played through Baldur's Gate.
The original?
Yeah.
Wow.
I saw the Baldur's Gate 3 preview and that made me.
What do you mean you played through it? You did start to finish?
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow. Preparing for 3.
Yeah. Just real quick, what I like about that game is how weird it is. It's a lot of wandering around in the woods. You don't get to the city of Baldur's Gate till the end of the game. Like it's really you just wander around and like you just meet people and like sometimes you meet like a stargazer and he's like, oh, I'm looking at the stars to like predict the future. And you're like, oh, can you tell me my future? And he's like, no, fuck off. And then that's it. Like you don't ever talk to him again the rest of the game. And like it's really unpredictable, like what's going to turn into a quest and what's going to turn into like fun dialogue and what's just like a random one-off thing. Like it keeps you on your toes more than I think modern RPGs do, which I think are a little bit more formulaic in a lot of ways.
So Baldur's Gate 3 is being made by Larian, which is mm-hmm. the Divinity Original Sin folks. Who made the first one?
The Black Isle team, or not Black Isle. What do you call it? The team that made all those Infinity Engine games. Let's
I'm not sure.
It up. Is it?
I thought it was somebody like Obsidian or BioWare or something like that.
It was BioWare, my bad. And Black Isle was the company that was making Fallout at the time. Now I'm getting these computer RPG companies mixed up.
Yeah, it happens. I've also been playing Bloodstained: Curse of the Moon 2, which is great.
Just in, so have I.
What's that?
This just in, so have I.
Oh, well, cool. Awesome. Yeah. I love it. It's awesome. I've got all four characters now. I think it's such a cool mechanic to be able to switch between characters on the fly, use characters to get to different areas, but then, you know, once their health is up, you lose a life and you only have the other three left. I think that's all really cool. And Sam,
go ahead.
I don't know about you, but I think it's cool that one of the characters uses a pistol with infinite ammo.
Mm-hmm. It's really amazing. There's like a snipe. It's like, it's, you know, for people who don't know this game, it's made by Igarashi, who made Symphony of the Night, but this is like an 8-bit Castlevania, which he didn't work on. So he's making these 8-bit Castlevania games. They look so cool. They look like Shovel Knight. They have, you know, too many colors to actually be 8-bit and et cetera, et cetera. But they're so, so pixel art enhanced. It's really, really cool. And as Damon was saying, you can switch between four characters. One of them is a corgi.
Yep.
And the corgi's in a mech suit, just unlocked that character. It's really funny. But yeah, there's like this one like sniper character where it's like, if you can picture any level in Castlevania with like the annoying skeleton going back and forth and then throwing a bone, like that, those enemies, every enemy in Castlevania is in this game. They're just skinned differently. And so those are in there. And like, imagine being able to just be like, it's like Indiana Jonesing it, like pulling out a gun and just like shooting it. Like you're not, you know, you have your whip and you're like, how am I going to deal with this guy? And you're just like, bam, it's the best thing. It is really funny how much Castlevania is in this. Like, I just got to a part where the stupid swans with the flea men from Castlevania 1 are. In this game, it's just like, whatever. It's like a, you know, a griffin with like a sea hag or something. And they just change it. It's like a complete copy. It's so funny.
Yeah, it's good. It actually wasn't Igarashi, his team, that makes the Curse of the Moon spinoffs. They hire Anycreate, which is a Japanese, like basically a retro game farmhouse formed by former Capcom employees in 1996. We actually, the reason I bring this all up is because we got an email about Curse of the Moon 2 this week from Mike in Toronto. He says, Bloodstained Curse of the Moon, or Circle of the Moon 2 recently came out. It is excellent. Surely a Damien game if there ever was one, perhaps a Clavey or even a Justy game as well. Playing through this game made me realize that the developer, Anycreates, can do no wrong for me. From the 8-bit Mega Man revivals a decade ago to Blaster Master Zero, the Bloodstained games, and more, I find myself thoroughly satisfied with their output. I'd be interested to know what developers you guys have complete faith in, what studio's ability and output means a guaranteed buy from you.
I didn't realize they did Blaster Master.
They did Blaster Master Zero, 1, and 2.
What a record.
They did Mega Man Zero, 1 through 4. They did Mega Man 9 and 10. Wow. Yeah, they're just like an awesome developer. But yeah, are there any developers like you guys just, you hear they're making a new game, you're already on board?
There used to be, but they're gone now. Like, I used to be really excited about Retro, but the people that made the games I liked at Retro are not at Retro anymore. That's the problem with a name or a brand without its creatives. Like, so many people come together to make games that I kind of have to follow the people. I think that's the right thing to do. But sometimes there's that magic team which makes a bunch of things together, and then they split up and they go make other amazing things.
Yeah. I used to feel that way about Rare.
Oh, yeah, exactly.
And now they're everywhere.
Mm-hmm. But
I mean, it's such an obvious answer,
funny,
but like,
your favorite joke there.
It was a rhymey joke.
Nintendo EAD, right? Like, the worst Mario and Zelda game are still so much better than, you know, almost anything else that's ever been made. And like, and they've really figured out, like, the thing that I love most about modern day Nintendo is like how they pay homage to the old while still like pressing forward and presenting a new vision for like what Mario or Zelda could be or should be. Like, they strike the perfect balance between being contemporary and nostalgic. And I just have total faith in, like, you know, like they're never going to make a bad game, right? Mm-hmm. Like, or at least not in the foreseeable future, as long as the current crew is together.
So, I was going to say that, but then I thought about, like, what if they made Wii Music?
Sure.
What if?
I don't know. I'll have to look that up. Yeah, they're so consistent.
I was just going to say, and maybe Sam would agree with me, is Digital Eclipse.
I was just going to bring that up. That's really funny. So Digital Eclipse, we like because they have this really high standard for reissuing games. So that's who did the Aladdin and Lion King package. And the Disney Afternoon Collection, which I loved.
Mega Man Legacy Collection.
Yeah, and the Mega Man Legacy Collection. It's just like, that's really cool, right? Because they found their niche and they're so good at that. And I think that's great.
Yeah, it's really good.
Yeah, I think it's a good point that it's often the like lead creatives that you follow rather than necessarily a company. And then there are the obvious answers where there is like, you know, whoever the lead creative is on a project at a company like Naughty Dog or Rockstar, like the no-brainer ones where you know that it's just a whole host of lots of really good talent to where you're going to get such specific level of detail out of literally everybody who's working on every angle of a game. But I guess my unique one might be Remedy. I've just sort of like always loved the wacky brain direction of those games and like how drastically fantastical they can be. And also, with a lot of darkness without coming across too heavy-handed at all times with that darkness.
No, that's really good. That's a really good choice. I like that.
Remedy is Control.
Yeah.
And Alan Wake.
Yeah.
Quantum Break.
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
There's always outliers, as your list kind of indicates. But yeah, I think that for the most part, there's like a specific direction of the way they think about games that is really unique to me.
I don't think Quantum Break was a bad game by any means.
It was an interesting experiment.
Yeah, interesting experiment. It's a good way to describe it. I used to feel that way about BioWare. I guess there's a lot
Me
like
too.
Sam said.
Yeah,
there's a lot like Sam said that I used to always think of as a guaranteed day one buy for me. But
yeah,
just roll for me when they existed.
That would have been like Blizzard. Or like, you know, I still think some of the criticism of Blizzard is a little overblown. Like, if you look at their output, like, it's incredible. But they're not a home run anymore. We're like, it used to be like, whatever they do, I'm there day one. Yeah.
Yeah. All right, let's move on. After many, many leaks, Far Cry 6 was officially revealed by Ubisoft over the weekend. They chose to sort of reveal that game with the reveal of the villain because they have an amazing actor playing the villain, Giancarlo Esposito from Breaking Bad, Better Call Saul, The Mandalorian, so much else. What was everyone's like first impression about Far Cry 6? I'm a huge Far Cry fan, as everybody knows. I reviewed 5 and New Dawn for IGN. It's funny you talk about developers that are like you're guaranteed day one buy. There are also certain game series that people think about that way too. And just hearing that there's another Far Cry on the way, even though we don't know anything about it, I know that I'm already on board.
That first trailer, despite all the leaks, that kind of took a lot of its momentum out. Like, I feel like they were hoping that Giancarlo Esposito reveal was going to be a really big one, especially because his face doesn't really clearly show up, even though you can tell from his voice, his face doesn't clearly show up until the end. And they had to like take that clip and put it on Twitter when it was revealed that he was going to be in the game. But I really liked, Damon, your interview with him. It was really like a good insight into the character and the villain, which, like, Damon, you noted that Far Cry has always kind of been about its front stage villains. Mm-hmm. And then Giancarlo Esposito said something really nice about, like, he initially like kind of cringes at playing villains. Like, he doesn't want to be this kind of like vilified typecast actor, I suppose. Mm-hmm. But he said that it was more about creating a human being rather than necessarily like a cartoonish kind of villain. And I think that's really cool about the Far Cry series, is that there's so much depth to those characters that there's something either at least charming about them, if not in Giancarlo Esposito's, for his character's perspective, maybe even something redeeming, because it seems like they're setting it up in that way, where like there's a lot of different avenues to his villainy that's not really expressed as this like black and white kind of hero versus villain structure. Mm-hmm. So that was really enticing.
I have this thing that I'm starting to develop a theory about Ubisoft and how it DB's games that I just don't like. And I don't like how they do a big story thing, and then they show a little bit of gameplay, and believe me, I'll expand on this and then they just never show the thing I want to see, which is like kind of like just somebody like going through what the game is like outside of the things that they think will impress us. Like, cause I'm impressed actually by the open worlds, and like, I want to see like what setting is this in and stuff like that. And I want to see like, where is this Far Cry set is the most interesting question to me. And people are saying like, oh, it's like kind of a Cuba like thing. Well, like show me what that looks like. Like, I really want to see what that looks like. And they did the same thing just now with Assassin's Creed, and it pissed a bunch of people off. They're like, okay, big gameplay reveal. Now this is just a cinematic big gameplay reveal. No, they're just showing a kind of like, you know, 10 nice screenshots rotating. Like, like, why are we doing it like this? Like, show me that vertical slice, even if that's, you know, a bull shot of some level. But I mean, obviously the acting and how this unfurled was like actually really entertaining. I was kind of riveted while I was watching it, but I have no idea if I'm going to want to play this game or not.
Sure.
There's not that many open world FPS games, and so Far Cry occupies sort of a specific niche for me that I always, you know, they come out infrequently enough that like I'm on board. I'm like you, Damon. They're just sort of like auto purchases, like don't even really need to think about it. Although I was a little bummed out by 5, so maybe I do need to think about it somewhat. But like that loop that you've talked about many times of just like, I'm gonna scout out an outpost and to mark everybody, and then maybe release a bear, maybe I'll get a rocket launcher, maybe I'll strap some C4 onto a Jeep. Like that freedom that they give you, it's one of those formulas that like feels very, very obvious, but like actually isn't replicated that well or that successfully by games that aren't Far Cry. They continue to kind of do it best of breed. So like that's really just clearing out outposts. That's all I care about.
Yep. I've always said...
Go ahead, Damon. Sorry.
I was just going to say, I've always said they should just make Far Cry Outposts and I play the heck out of that game.
Yeah, like it's pretty true that Far Cry is established enough that you can sort of know what to expect. And then, Sam, I was thinking about what you were just saying. There's this different level of marketing these days. And I was thinking about Giancarlo Esposito, and then I was thinking about Keanu Reeves and then Norman Reedus, just about some of the higher profile celebrities that have been appearing in games these days. And I think like the association with this like cinematic experience or whatever else has become such a high priority. And it used to be like, oh, this is a somewhat well-known name who happens to be doing a, you know, VO for this game. And now it's, here's a huge name and they're a primary character in this game. So it's supposed to be kind of competitive against the rest of the entertainment industry. And I was thinking about how prominent that's become. So I guess like that first big beat has to be, what's the big, powerful, splashy thing thing, especially for AAA studios, like what's the big splashy thing that you're going to have to offer? How much money did you put into this game that I can directly see so that I know what I'm paying for is of value as well? So it's a little bit about that and a little bit about like Far Cry being a bit of a known quantity. And then the other thing was we did a breakout interview with the narrative director on the game, and it gave a little bit of a tease of something that might be unique to gameplay for Far Cry 6, which was the team had apparently gone to Cuba for like a month, which side note is like a really cool thing for game developers to be able to do. Like they just go and embed and learn about history and about different cultures and stuff to be able to put that into their games. So super cool that they got to do that. But they went there and they saw that like people were doing a lot of like DIY makeshift things. And so there's a screenshot where there's clearly like a laser pointer just kind of attached to a gun to create like a sniper level experience, I suppose. So it seems like there's going to be this kind of maybe crafting ability where you go and just pick up items from around the world and they're able to combine it in a variety of ways to, you know, elevate your weaponry.
That makes sense. That aligns with some of the other things they've shown that are like the kind of the Cuba flags, which are like, really old cars that are kept running in contemporary settings. Like that's like a very, classic way to indicate Cuba, because that's true. It's like a lot of the tech there is, you know, keeping up in some ways, but also just like recycling the old tech in a lot of other ways. There's a lot of countries like that. Vietnam's like that too. It's really, really cool. Like, so I think that could be like all part of the aesthetic of the game.
That's why they show the vintage cars too. And it's like basically, I think the first shot, it's like a vintage car on fire. And then.
The only cars in Cuba. Like they just only have cars from that era and they're kept running now. It's amazing. I was wondering like where did the team that made Ghost of Tsushima get to go to kind of think about Japan, how beautiful it was? Because I actually don't know much about the island of Tsushima. And like, I was wondering if there's ever tourism again, like, is that going to be like a place that's like interesting to go and people might become interested in?
It might be disappointing.
I was going to say, you're probably thinking about the level of hot springs that exist in Tsushima in the game.
That's all I'm thinking about.
There's one town that's literally just a hot spring town. It's
incredible. Amazing
thing. Yeah. And again, in quarantine, I'm like, to live here or just to exist here, even but for a moment.
It was actually like relaxing and soothing to like just see these beautiful environments, including hot springs. So it was really, really great. Love it.
When Jin gets in a hot spring, he does not go in butt first.
He doesn't. He goes in butt shown. But on display. There's one scene where I walked into a hot spring and there's just like an older, you know, woman kind of kneeling by it, like sort of meditating or whatever else, and he just fully strips down, walks in, and he just starts reflecting on life. It's really nice.
She's like, don't mind me.
And she's like, okay.
And when he comes out, every hot spring has a like a maple tree, and they talk about it at some point. I don't know why it's always a maple tree. It must have some significance. But the maple tree like fig leaves his naughty bits right as he comes out each time. It's very fun.
It's very Witcher 3. Mm-hmm. We've learned a couple more details about Far Cry 6 since the Ubisoft Forward presentation, which are for the first time since Far Cry 3, your character is completely voiced. There's a voice actor playing your character. And then also in cutscenes, you're going to see your character. Even though it's a first-person game, you usually never see yourself. In all cutscenes, you'll switch to a third-person perspective. So hopefully there's some cool customization stuff happening.
Yeah, that was the earliest promise of... we were doing some research in Cyberpunk, and I was looking at like really early articles. And it was like one of the big things is that people were upset that you couldn't see your character in that game. So like, no, you're going to be able to see your character in third-person during cutscenes. And then they just took that out. It's just like a weird progression to be like, you guys will be fine in first person.
Well, that was an original complaint around Cyberpunk too, when it was first shown off at like an E3 or something many years ago.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Cyberpunk. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Did I say something else?
No, I probably just glossed over that part.
She's just tuning you out like you
did. Yeah, I was like,
That's a total, having a voiced and real invisible protagonist is like such an underrated part of 3 and like such a critical detail that was missing from 4 and 5, in my opinion. Like the character you play as in 3, like kind of sucks. Like he's kind of an asshole. Like he's a little bit like Holden Caulfield-esque where it's like you're playing as this person that's hard for you to root for, and like contrasting that against Voss, like, I don't know. That just allows them to do interesting narrative things that, I hope that's kind of what they're going to be exploring in 6.
Yeah. I'm looking forward to it. It's out next year, early next year, February 18th, I believe.
This episode of Game Scoop is brought to you by NordVPN. As Scoop Nation knows, your Omega Cops have been a little obsessed with a movie called Weekend at Bernie's lately. But as happens too often these days, it is difficult to find it streaming here in the US. That's where NordVPN comes in. With NordVPN, you can switch your virtual location to a more enlightened region where they appreciate the comic delights of Weekend at Bernie's. And it's not just for streaming movies and shows. Switching your virtual location can allow you to save money by purchasing flights, hotels, and subscriptions from other countries at a cheaper price. And you can do all this worry-free as NordVPN threat protection features protect you from viruses, malware, and phishing sites. Best of all, NordVPN costs the price of a cup of coffee a month, and one account can be used on up to 6 devices. To get the best discount on your NordVPN plan, go to nordvpn.com/gamescoop. Our link will also give you 4 extra months on the 2-year plan. There's no risk with Nord's 30-day money-back guarantee. That's nordvpn.com/gamescoop. 1 in 5 Americans has learned a new language on their bucket list, or life backlog, if you will. If that's you, make 2024 the year you finally check it off the list with Babbel. Upgrade your personal skill set in 2024 with Babbel, the science-backed language learning app that actually works. Babbel's quick 10-minute lessons are handcrafted by over 200 language experts to help you start speaking a new language in as little as 3 weeks. Its tips and tools are approachable, accessible, rooted in real-life situations, and deliver with conversation-based teaching so you're ready to practice what you've learned in the real world. I have a trip to Mexico coming up, so I've been using Babbel to brush up on my Spanish. The courses are short and sweet, so I can do one whenever I have a few minutes to spare. And the words and phrases it teaches you are designed for practical, real-world use, like ordering at a restaurant or asking for directions. Babbel can even provide you feedback on your pronunciation with its speech recognition tech. And it's not just for Spanish. Babbel includes 14 different language courses, each backed by a 20-day money-back guarantee. Here's a special limited-time deal for Scoop Nation. Right now, get up to 60% off your Babbel subscription, only for our listeners, at babbel.com/gamescoop. Get up to 60% off at babbel.com/gamescoop, spelled BABBEL.com/gamescoop. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Let's check in with the listeners.
Hey, listeners.
Listeners, remember, you can always reach us at the email address, gamescoop@IGN.com, just like Jim Carlson from Cleveland did. He says, I've been stuck in a rut for a while where nothing I play is really scratching my gaming itch. Worse yet, I don't know what that itch is. That got me thinking about TV streaming services and the suggestions they make. Maybe something algorithm-based that looks at your library or even checks your achievements to help work through your backlog. I think Steam may already have something like this, but do you think something like this would be feasible for the next-gen consoles? It's an interesting idea. Okay.
First of all, I think those recommendations are bad. Like, I don't think they're good enough. I know people like them and they work for other people, but I'm always surprised at how silly they are. I do like the combinations of words where it's like, you know, hilarious sci-fi horror antics or something like those are cute, but like, I'm not going to choose what I watch based on that. I choose what I watch based on critics and reading. And that's why I have this job. And that's why I work here. I don't like the idea of the company trying to sell me the thing, choosing the things that I might like. I just think that's wrong. I don't trust it.
Like this. Algorithms for Netflix, though, aren't necessarily because you're paying for one subscription service. You're not paying individually. So it's really just about here's what you've watched. Here's what other people have watched. Here's what's new. Here's what I'm categorizing by certain genres, which like would not work. Like you can't just categorize that way for games. It'd have to be much more extensive and it would have to incorporate both user reviews and critic reviews. But ultimately, how you would kind of vet what you want to watch based off of a trailer and reviews, I imagine the same structure would work for games. So you would need to read those reviews, look at some gameplay trailers or whatever else, and make a determination based off of that. But especially with like subscription services becoming a thing in games, like with Game Pass or something like that, I think it makes sense to create a more robust, reliable suggestion service because you want to be making use of your subscription service in that case.
Yeah, the subscription service is motivated to keep you subscribed forever. So they have to, you know, it's in their best interest to keep showing you things that they think you're going to like that maybe you wouldn't know about. I mean, the eye opener for me was when last summer when I visited my parents and we logged onto my mom's Netflix, and her Netflix is completely different than my Netflix. Like, it was all like romance shows and historical shows and like weird British, there's always British detectives. It's like 5,000 British detective shows.
You looked at her browser history.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, and so like, you know, like that's because I know what Netflix is. Like, I know what that service offers, but like she's living in a parallel universe with a completely different Netflix than me. And like, that's how that service gets, you know, however many subscribers it has, 100 million subscribers. Is it that there's not one Netflix? There's dozens of Netflixes based off, you know, the type of person you are and your demographics. And like, I don't know about video games. I don't know that they're diverse enough to support that level of like, we need to show, you know, Sam a completely separate makeup of games than like, you know, than Tina or Justin. Like, video games, even when they're super different, are still like kind of samey. Like, they all fall into like a handful of archetypes. Unlike television and movies, I would say, which are more diverse, where like there's certain genres of movie where I don't care how well reviewed it is. Like, I'm not interested. Whereas like, yeah, any 10 out of 10 game, no matter what it is, I'll play.
Yeah.
Yeah. Although, like, I forget what it is, but there's one service, because I've been subscribed to all of them for so long, I can't remember which one had the system. But when you first log in and subscribe, they ask you, like, what do you normally like to watch? Like, comedies or, you know, action movies. And so based on what you're selecting, they'll prioritize things that are labeled in that way. And I can totally see, like, you know, if I wrote, like, I want a funny game, or I want a short game, or I want, like, we actually did a big list of games to play while we're all stuck in quarantine. And we labeled it that way. We labeled it in, like, a very specific use case where it's like, I just want a short, quick experience, or I want something where I can get lost in it, spend hours, so I don't have to really think about anything else. I think you could probably do categories in that way that would suit either someone's personal style or just their mood, like, whatever you're in the mood to play at that point.
Where these services really, really thrive, and Steam, you know, as the reader, Jim, I think his name was, wrote in, is in exposing indie games and smaller games. You know, like, if you're really into, you know, shooters on Steam, like, it's going to expose you to, like, weirder, smaller, you know, just more unusual games. Like, if you like this, play this in your discovery queue. And that's just invaluable. Like, there is not enough shelf space in the world to promote every Steam game. And so to like laser target it at people that like they know that they're going to be interested in is such a boon for smaller creators.
Yeah.
I'll emphasize again, like, I'm philosophically opposed to having the service making money off of the games recommending you games. I don't think that's how you should be picking your games. Even if it's good and it does the right thing, the motivation for that is not the same as a, you know, an editorial outlet that's saying like, these are fun games because I'm a person that played a bunch of games and I know about them. That's not their motivation. Their motivation is to get you to either keep subscribing, to buy more games. There's just a lot of different motivations that they have that are not in your best interest. It doesn't say it won't work.
But they're not saying the game is good. They're just saying, here's something you might be interested in, and you have to decide for yourself if you want to check it out or not.
They could be throwing in something that have another motivation to put in there that has nothing to do with that, and you'll never know that.
Yeah, I mean, if people are a little bit more transparent about what their algorithm is based off of, especially if they're doing a bit of a survey thing right at the front where it's like, what do you normally like to play? And it's creating a system based off of that, like in a similar experience to where your Netflix might look very different from my Netflix. If it works like that, then it's helpful. Because even for critics, you know, if you're making a list of like, here are the best action games to play or the best action movies to watch, like, we're also doing it for a business purpose. We want to get more readers and more views, which ultimately translates to, you know, more of a base of our financial operation. So ultimately, you know, kind of all comes back around to that. But I think as long as people are transparent about what the effect of that suggestion service is, then it could be really useful, especially considering. And the reason why I was initially saying like it wouldn't work for games as much is because there's so many games, but I suppose there's also lots of indie, you know, movies as well, and lots of things across history, across time to catch up on. So it's kind of the same problem there too.
What I'm saying is the only ethical way to do this is to write Damon and ask for our suggestions of games to play, which is absolutely what we do on this show.
You will tweet them.
Yeah. And actually, we're going to do that in a little bit. I was just going to say, I agree with Sam that all these algorithms that are supposed to be suggesting movies and music for us today, I don't think any of them are any good. Netflix still doesn't understand the type of movies that I want to watch and the TV shows. It's always recommending me stuff I have no interest in. Spotify is really bad.
Insanely bad.
Spotify is so bad.
Discover.
My release radar, you know, comes up every Friday. I can go weeks without there being a single song that I like on there. So they, the algorithms are not working quite yet. And like the one on in the video game ecosystems are especially bad. Like on PlayStation, if you go to the PlayStation store, you're looking for like, you know, games that are hot right now. There's a Just For You. So I clicked on that. I was like, wow, Just For Me. PlayStation picked some games just for me. Let's see what
this
is.
They all start with the letter D.
Call of Duty Modern Warfare. Well, thank you. The guys at PlayStation really know me. Yeah, so like,
you think maybe there could be some reason why that's like maybe slotted manually?
That's I think you're exactly right.
They just think you're a hardcore gamer and therefore you would play hardcore games like Call of Duty.
Yeah, yeah. Aren't you gaming? Aren't you hardcore? Yeah. Why don't you play Call of Duty? Exactly. It's just a bully channel.
I have to say though, Spotify Discover, I find at least like 5 songs a week. Based on my Monday perusals.
It's rare for me. Okay, this is Duncan from St. Clair Shores, Michigan. And he says, I just bought a new PC. Yay for me. I was wondering if you guys could suggest any RTS or possibly some great tower defense games. Any great PC-only games to get. I'm looking for games that are not on console.
What a novel use of an email.
Yeah, right? It's lucky for him. We have an algorithm we can plug him into it. Going to pop out some suggestions.
Plug this into the JGBS algorithm.
Yeah, that's really good. I mean, saying PC exclusive is like too much. There's too many to do. But like, we can narrow it down to RTS and tower defense genres. The first thing I would say is that both of those genres are like, not dead, but they're not the popular thing anymore, right? Like, no. That's sort of like, I still love them personally, so please don't take that as a knock. Like, I still find and play new ones, but it does get a little bit challenging. I would say to look at games like Northgard on Steam, and I'm actually not a Total War guy, but like Total War Warhammer is obviously, those games are incredibly popular. Total War Three Kingdoms. I really like to play, I don't know what you would call them, more like town building or simulation games. So they don't necessarily have to have a combat end game. So I play a lot of games like Factorio or like Banished or like anything where you start from nothing and you have one little building and then you're sort of building up a big civilization in real time and sort of like trying to figure out a way to thrive in this harsh environment.
Keep saying game names because we'll eliminate those from 20 questions.
So those would be some places to start. I think Factorio is like the most underrated game of the last decade. That game's incredible. So
what's the recent sort of town management survival game in a frozen wasteland?
I think that's Northgard. Are you thinking of
something? I think Frost is in the name. I want to say. Ooh, I can't remember right now. I'll look it up in a little bit.
Frostpunk?
Yeah, I was gonna say. Are you thinking of Frostpunk?
Maybe it's Frostpunk. Yeah. Anyway,
sounds cool.
What about Company of Heroes?
I haven't played them. I mean, I know they're well liked.
I just think they're considered like the best World War II RTS games of all time, I believe.
No StarCraft.
Oh yeah, well, I mean, there's StarCraft, not World War II themed. In terms of tower defense games, I would recommend Kingdom Rush. That whole series, even though some of them are available on Xbox or other platforms. Another really good one is Dungeon Warfare 1 and 2, both really good.
So Monster Train, Monster Train, Orcs Must Die. I really like this franchise called Gemcraft. That's been what I like about Gemcraft is that it started as like a little flash game on like, you know, Armor Games or whatever website. Now they're making big commercially released, you know, tower defense games on Steam. So they're sort of like this holdover from a lost era that's still, you know, near and dear to me personally.
All I can think of was how do you like Gem Apples?
Okay, one more email to get through. This is Yasin. He says, long time listener, first time writing in. Love you guys. Before I ask my question, I think you'd be interested to hear this story. I am a primary school teacher in England. In UK, primary schools run from ages 5 to 11. And yesterday, I played some rounds of 20 questions with my class and thought it would be fun for you to hear some of the questions this new generation thought would be good to ask. For some added context, the children I played this with are ages 10 to 11, old enough to understand the rules of the game. The questions that stuck out to me were, can you build?
That makes a big sense. One.
Yeah. Does this...
Most of the games that are popular right now.
Does this game have victory dances?
Wow.
This one, is this an old game from like 5 years ago?
Oh, no.
Is it on iPhone? It would ask. Does this game have party chat? Which I thought is a little odd. I think of that as like a
we're gonna console, start using that one.
Yeah, console gaming thing.
I like this game and answer that. I don't know.
Yeah. Is there more than one map? Was a good one. And then the last one is, can you buy packs? Which I guess like microtransaction stuff.
Yeah, those last two are pretty related too. It's fascinating that it's so closely related to the trends. I mean, it makes complete sense too.
I mean, like that's their frame of reference for video games, right?
The fact that base building is like, thanks to Fortnite, is like the most mainstream thing in video games. And like, you can draw this direct line from like, you know, Minecraft to Fortnite to now every PC game. It just makes me so happy. It warms my heart. It's like my favorite thing to do in a game. And now it's like, it's broken through to like the mainstream in this really, really awesome way. And like, now I know that we're going to get a decade of like interesting takes on that. That's just feels very good.
Yasin says, there were some better questions thrown in after guidance from myself, but I thought it was a funny assessment of the types of games the kids are into nowadays and what they perceive to be standard industry-wide game mechanics. The games that popped up frequently were Minecraft, Fortnite, Mario Kart, and Roblox, as well as some mobile games I've never heard of. As for my question, just as some people almost look down on children that only play Minecraft, Fortnite, etc., do you think there were games that we played growing up that meant we were similarly looked down upon? I'm of a similar age to most members of GameScoop. Did the generation older than us think we were lost souls because of the games we were playing and that we weren't experiencing gaming for what it truly was and could be? Because that's what I feel people think about children nowadays. I think we all sort of grew up with the, you know, the first wave, so there wasn't an older generation to be gatekeeping at us, right?
Yeah,
that we weren't
sense playing
the right games.
There was no like looking down your nose at like, you know, Fortnite is considered like uncool if you're still playing it, even though it's still the most popular game on earth. Like, I the first time I remember that sort of coming up was like the gamer that would buy nothing but like Madden and Call of Duty every year. Then it was like, that was like the eye rolly, like, it's too popular to be cool thing. Like, video games are not popular enough for that to be the case that I can recall.
More recent than like anybody's childhood in this room.
Yeah, I think so.
That being that trend, yeah. I think it was more about, at least for me personally, especially given my like minimal access to games growing up and very like regimented, supervised access, was like, it was more so, oh, you didn't play that? That's more the level of shaming that you'd get. Like, how could you possibly have glossed over this masterpiece of the 90s or early 2000s or whatever it may be? I think it's more so along those lines. But if I had to pick a game that maybe people didn't look down on, but at a point of time, they'd be like, you're still playing that game, is World of Warcraft, because I played that thing for 2 years. So that might be too long.
That was my big example. That's what I wanted to bring up.
World of Warcraft?
I completely thought people were lame that played World of Warcraft.
Hey!
I couldn't believe it. Like, I thought it was so lame. And like, I was a kid. Like, this is a long time ago. Mm-hmm. And I just like, you know, I was playing Perfect Dark and like shooters and stuff at the time, like hardcore stuff, you know, which is funny because I don't like that stuff as much now. But like, boy, yeah, I thought like it was like, but it wasn't World of Warcraft at all. It was like Second Life was so lame. And like my parents kept trying to get me to talk about it because it was in like every college classroom, but nobody actually played it. Like there's stuff like that where I was like striking me as like, oh, these are sad little communities of losers. And I don't actually think that way. I really don't. But like that's what I was thinking at the time, and I remember that. And when I was a kid, I was also a little snob, and I really thought Ninja Turtles was stupid, and He-Man and G.I. Joe and Transformers to some extent. And I like really looked down on kids that liked those games and those toys and those properties. That was my thing.
We wouldn't have been friends as kids.
Well, no, we would have, because you still like Nintendo and Legos, and there's plenty of overlap. I was just weird about it. I thought they were for some reason.
Like, yeah, there's still sort of that sentiment. Like, there are people, not that I'm targeting you, Damon, with this, but like, there are people who think of Animal Crossing as like, is that even really a game? Like, what are you actually doing in this experience? And that's sort of the same lines of Second Life, where it's more about an experience rather than like a really set structured level of gameplay, even though technically there is in Animal Crossing. It's just not as apparent or maybe as like normalized. I don't know if normalized is the right word there, but I think you guys know what I'm saying.
Well, and then my friends that played World of Warcraft had you know, a life where we play Mario Kart and stuff like that. But they would like opt out of that to play 8 hours by themselves with, you know, people online. And I was just like, I couldn't believe it. Like, I couldn't believe like that was the option. And of course I have different context for that now. Of course, mm-hmm. I know that people found community that way and it was a good thing and all of that. Like I don't subscribe to that anymore. But I, at the time, like thought about it. I was like, dude, come on, man. You're going to stay home and play World of Warcraft? Like, we're going to the beach.
Listen, there's friends in World of Warcraft too, you know. You spend time together. You help each other get your mounts and all that.
The beach is all sandy and scary. You got to talk to people.
Exactly.
It gets everywhere. I just want to be my dwarf. Mm-hmm. Just hang out in Ironforge.
Mm-hmm. You didn't play as a dwarf.
Yeah, I had many characters.
Sam, I think you had, everyone had many different characters in World of Warcraft.
I was mostly a dwarf.
But nobody played as dwarves.
I was a dwarf and his name was Bulb.
Bulb.
Wasn't that like didn't you have some problem with that name because it was like so short that people targeted it for some reason?
I used to, so the way World of Warcraft works is you can just type whatever name you want into the name generator and then it tells you whether it's taken or not and you don't know until you try. So I used to try... thousands of names until I got like lucky with like I think one of my characters was named Stab just because miraculously like that had never been taken.
Yeah.
Wow.
And that was like a hobby of mine, is I would try to squat on like of like really desirable, and there was no shortcut. You just had to try, like I would just, you know, go try to think of every single word I could think of.
People used to pretty sell good accounts in World of Warcraft.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, and that brings us to video game 20 questions. Our suggestion this week comes from Kevin O, and he has provided a normal mode and a hard mode option. Mm-hmm. I leave it up to you guys.
I'm feeling brave.
Give us the hard mode.
Okay, hard mode it is. Let the questioning begin.
Is there building in this game?
No.
No, he asked, are there buildings in this game?
Good save.
He was just saying it in a funny way.
Yeah.
Oh, boy. Do you play as a human in this game?
Sometimes.
Is this an RTS game?
Oh, sorry, we missed that. You know, what was that?
RTS? Is it an RTS game? Or just a strategy game?
Not, which are you asking?
Is it a strategy? Well, is it an RTS game? I'm trying to get to the point of you're controlling multiple characters.
It is not an RTS game.
Because we could use the cheat for that and it'd be really amazing.
Does this game have like a God's eye camera perspective? Is it like above? Is it above the action looking down
on
what's happening?
Yes.
Cool.
Well, we got to something pretty fast. That wasn't so
It's amazing.
That narrows it down.
But it's not real time. So it's like, you know, it could be like Divinity or something
I think this might be like a sprite-based early game, though. That's why it's confusing to think of that God's eye.
Could be. Is this a party-based role-playing game? Like, do you control a party of adventurers going on an adventure?
Oh no!
What have I done?
Well, let's say no, because it's not what you're thinking of is not what this game is, and that's five.
It sounds like there's a group of characters, and we're a quarter of a way to failing this. So, is this a PC game?
Is it politically correct?
No, this is for personal computer.
No, it's not a PC.
Oh,
is it a primarily a shooter game?
No.
I was thinking like twin stick shooter or something.
Did this come out on cartridge originally?
Yes.
Okay. Man. I mean, did it come out originally on a Nintendo cartridge?
Yes.
Maybe that this was
a strategy game.
I bet it's like Godzilla 2 or something weird for the NES. Did you mean a Nintendo game, or did you mean?
I meant Nintendo made, but
okay.
I,
So yeah. We don't know if it's on the NES yet.
No, I don't think so.
Is this an NES game?
No, not an NES game. And that's 10. And so maybe we need to clarify. I was not, I didn't think you meant Nintendo made, Justin.
You thought I meant NES?
No, you said a Nintendo cartridge. Oh. I meant like, so a cartridge on a Nintendo platform.
No, I get it. I get it. Yeah. I got that. Yeah.
Understood. I don't know. It could be like ActRaiser, something weird like that. Didn't we just have that?
Yeah. I can't remember. I need to know what console it's on. So there's only really two other cartridge-based ones, but then there's handheld. So do you want to eliminate handheld or do you want to go with the console?
Well, it is hard mode. I don't know what that is.
Is this a handheld game?
Yes.
Oh, my goodness. But then there's DS, 3DS, Advance, Switch.
Was this game originally released on a console with two screens?
Yes.
This is insane.
It's happening. It's happening.
Yeah.
Okay. Was this originally released on a console that had 3D?
Yes.
Okay. So it's an original 3DS game.
It's a 3DS game.
Yeah. And it was on 3DS, and it's a weird, hard game to get, and it's top down. You kind of are a God's Eye View, not made by Nintendo. Maybe we don't know that.
You sometimes control a human.
Yeah, that's got to mean multiple characters, right?
Do you control multiple characters at the same time?
No.
Okay, so you're just switching between characters.
But it's still top-down view. Interesting.
You're switching between multiple characters.
Do you think it's Super Mario 3D World?
That's what I was thinking about. That's exactly what I was thinking about. I don't know why that would be hard mode. It'd be 3D Land, though.
3D Land, yeah. Oh, yeah, it wouldn't be. But we don't know if it's a Nintendo. Is this a Nintendo published game?
No. That's 15.
I also think everyone in 3D Land is human.
It's unclear.
It really is.
Toad might not be.
Ugh, it's weird. It was not Nintendo made.
Yeah, it's just some third party game on 3DS, published. Of which, like, you know.
The temptation to use my computer to cheat is strong.
Mm-hmm.
Down. I'm trying to think what you could possibly like. Maybe it's like a Chinatown Wars type game, but that wasn't on 3DS.
Yeah, I mean, I owned and liked my 3DS, but I didn't, you know, I didn't get like deep into that library, so I don't. I mean, was this game developed by a company in the United States? A developer in the United States?
No.
Yeah. I can't hardly even remember my 3DS.
Could it be a Monster Hunter? Are those all behind the person third person mode?
Yeah.
Oh my goodness! So hard to think of the 3DS library this way. Did this score highly?
Yes.
So popular, or not necessarily popular, but a critically acclaimed 3DS game that it's probably on our top 25 games list.
Would it be if it's on hard mode?
Yeah, I don't know.
We were doing so well.
Yeah,
you guys got a lot of them. A lot of the elements. I still feel like there's something within the strategy realm to be explored.
I agree. I'm wondering if it's like, you know, I don't know, like a Final Fantasy Tactics game. They were both on GBA, but like, you know, something like that.
What would be a question about strategy or genre that we could use?
I mean, I can't even think of any of those games on the 3DS. That's like, it's not going to be useful for me.
And it's Japanese too, which is weird.
Well, not American.
Oh, yeah. Probably Japanese. Yeah, that's true. Should we just ask if it has strategy elements to it or RPG elements or something like that?
When you hit or attack things in this game, are there numbers? Do you see numbers popping out?
I don't know. I can't answer that.
It's not a strategy game. There's no numbers.
Possibly still an RPG, though.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And you, well, you're actually not controlling multiple characters at once. He said you're switching between characters.
Mm. Oh. I don't know. This is so difficult. Yeah. And we might not know the game, too.
Was there like a mana game on the 3DS? You're usually switching between characters in those games, aren't you?
Right, yeah. Does this game have... you said it doesn't know about the number, so it's probably not RPG.
Was there a Crystal Chronicles on the 3DS?
Not that I can recall.
But like, are Tower Defense, too, because you could control a human and then control a building, technically, or control, like...
Yeah.
A tank or a vehicle or something.
We can ask if it's a Square Enix game, but I just can't think of what that would be if that was the case.
I'm feeling really messed up by... I have a 3DS, and I love my 3DS, and I cannot think of any 3DS game besides, like, Mario 3D Land. Like, I know I have, like, if I open the, that's in this drawer right here.
Hey, can we phone a console?
I'm going to peek in my drawer.
That's phoning a console. Phoning a handheld.
Yeah, phoning a drawer. What about... should we ask like if it's sci-fi or fantasy?
I mean, I've given up, so.
Okay.
Oh, it could be Fire Emblem.
Yeah, but that's Nintendo published. We got rid of those.
Damn it. I was so happy for a sec.
Switching characters is the really confusing thing. And you're not always a human either.
What about a Pokemon game? They're not technically made by Nintendo.
Yeah, I don't think he would pull that on us, although we got screwed on that recently.
Again, the hard mode.
Yeah. I don't know. Like, let's just go. I kind of want to know if it's like who made the game and if we get really lucky.
Yeah.
Yep. Two questions and a guess.
Okay. Is this a. I don't even know. I wish I knew if it was Japanese or not. What's that?
What was your question? If it's Japanese or not?
Yeah.
It's probably Japanese.
Yeah, it probably is Japanese. Does this have realistic graphics?
No.
See, I think it's like, oh man, what if it has pixel art or really cute graphics? We might be able to get that then.
Yeah.
Is this a spin-off game?
Pretty good question.
Like, are you asking, like, is this a spin-off of a mainline series? Whoa, that's tough. Kind of. I'll say kind of.
Oh, no.
And that brings you to your guess, and I'll give you an incredible hint before your guess. Please. I don't know that we've ever mentioned this game a single time on this show.
Oh. Okay.
So throughout everything you know that we've ever talked about on this show... However, it is a game that, given where you work, you probably know what the game is.
Okay, so not any of our types of games.
Great. Well, I mean, we've definitely talked about Box Boy on this show, so it's not that.
I could also reveal the game if we're
go ahead and reveal it.
That point.
Yeah.
Who remembers Project Cross Zone?
Oh, yeah.
On the 3DS.
If Capcom, bunch of Capcom characters in it.
Capcom, Sega, and Bandai Namco characters in a turn-based strategy game.
Okay.
Wow. They made that was also when I remember the Jump games being popular. That was like a similar thing,
Shonen
right?
Jump. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's an anime crossover, right?
Can we go back to the easy one?
Yeah, we made a mistake.
We can do the easy one if you want.
Yeah. How easy is it?
Yeah, seriously.
Much easier than the last one.
All right, let's do it.
Let's do it. Lightning round. Yeah. We'll do it. Here we go. Okay. Kevin O, let the questioning begin.
Is it from after 2000?
Yes.
Is it on Switch?
No.
We know how to win.
Is it?
Go ahead.
Is it an exclusive?
No.
Is it on current? Is it on PS4 or Xbox One?
It's yes.
Such a tricky question these days, though. Anything could be a port or whatever.
I regret phrasing it that way.
Yeah, was it released on? Was it originally released on? We could probably start changing it to that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Is there multiplayer in this game?
Yes, that's five.
Was it developed in the United States?
No.
From here on out, I'm going to change the multiplayer question to, is multiplayer a primary part of this experience?
Yeah, I like that one. It's so subjective.
A little bit. Yeah, for sure. Did this come out on a disc-based medium?
Yes.
So not indie downloady stuff.
It's part of a series?
Yes.
They are.
Okay.
Wait. Yeah. I answered your question, even if you weren't really asking it.
It's okay.
Did it get good scores?
Yes.
But I'm having a hard time. We still don't know. Was this game on the PlayStation 3 originally?
Yes. Okay. That's 10.
Okay. So last gen. Soon to be last gen.
First party or anything?
No. But, well, it was multiplayer. Or not. It was multi-console.
Oh, okay.
So multi-console game from the PS3 and 360 generation developed in Japan. It has multiplayer.
No. Just not developed in the United States.
Did the company that makes this have E3 press conferences?
Yes.
Is the company Ubisoft?
Yes.
Ooh. Yeah, Damon saved us.
Yeah. All right.
We didn't narrow down.
Kind of weird for Ubisoft, right?
Is it a Tom Clancy game?
No.
That's
a smart question to eliminate stuff from Ubisoft.
I thought for sure it was Ghost Recon.
Yeah. Well, they don't have a huge amount of games with multiplayer in them.
No, I don't even think the Far Cry's have multiplayer, do they? Or do they? No one's playing them for that reason.
Yeah, exactly.
No.
They might have had. That was not last gen, was it? Or was it? That was this gen, was it?
What, Watch Dogs?
Yeah.
Two certainly was.
Maybe one was last gen.
Yeah, I can't remember now. Yeah.
Yeah, that's probably it.
Does it have multiplayer elements in it?
You already asked that.
No, I'm asking you guys.
Does Watch Dogs have multiplayer?
Watch Dogs, yeah.
I mean, it had that weird, like, it had that weird thing where you could, like, hack something and then someone had to come into your game. It had that thing that Ubisoft, it could be like Assassin's Creed, you know, where, like, they had those weird modes. Or, like, they weren't really multiplayer, but, like, other people can come into your game for a little bit.
Really? They have that?
Does it have a weird multiplayer mode where someone can, like, come into your game for a little bit and, like, fuck around, but it's not, like, traditional normal multiplayer?
Heard that what? Let's see.
While you're waiting, does this have sci-fi elements in it?
No.
Okay, it's not Assassin's Creed.
It's not Assassin's Creed or Watch Dogs.
What the hell?
What are there, we have like the Rabbids games?
Could be Rayman.
Oh yeah.
Is it a platformer?
No. It's 15.
Oh boy.
They made like a Prince of Persia last gen too, and a Splinter Cell. But Splinter Cell is Tom Clancy. They made that really gorgeous Prince of Persia game. The game's really underrated. The reboot that nobody liked.
Man.
And it's part of a series.
Just Dance technically has multiplayer.
Yeah.
It could be Just Dance. You should ask.
That'd be a weird one, though.
Yeah. Which year?
Yeah, exactly. Who the hell remembers?
Wow, that'd be really mean. That's so mean.
Yeah, seriously, which
Just Dance? Well, okay.
Well, wait, so it's not Tom Clancy, and it's not Rayman, or Assassin's Creed, or Watch Dogs, since they have sci-fi elements. So, I don't know. Is this a game in the Prince of Persia series?
No.
I'm sure there's series that, like, long-standing series that we're forgetting about.
Yeah, there must be.
Does UB have licenses that they were making licensed games on?
I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know. Like, all I have is Rabbids still.
It could be Rabbids. It could be, well, yeah, because they're not platformers. Mm.
But that was on Wii primarily. I don't think of the PlayStation 3 as a place that would have had that, but maybe with Move Controller BS, I don't know.
We still don't even know what, like, type of game it is, right? Genre-wise. Mm-hmm. Except for the multiplayer part.
Yeah. Wow, I didn't realize this would be hard mode.
Yeah, seriously. No.
Do you play as a human?
Yes.
Not rabbits.
Yeah.
They made... I mean, they make strategy games. I don't, none of them are on PS3, but like Settlers, games like that, are you, and Anno, those are...
You guys should make... you should remember that you're playing on easy mode.
What does that mean?
It should be easy.
But it's not.
There's also a hack you can use.
It's probably Assassin's
Creed. Did we mention it already?
I don't know why he has a sci-fi elements in it, though.
Well, but it could be, so maybe one of the Far Cry's does have some multiplayer mode that was not very popular.
Yeah,
it's a shooter.
Far Cry is the one that we haven't really tried yet.
Aren't those sci-fi-y?
No.
No.
They're just weird.
Okay. I mean, well, then it's Far Cry 3. But it's not really known for it.
It's probably Far Cry 3. What was the bear's name in the last Far Cry game? Hamburger? Hot dog?
Yeah.
Do you remember, Damon?
I don't remember.
Does this take place on a tropical island?
Yes.
All right. Definitely Far Cry.
Do you mark people's heads and then figure out a way to infiltrate their outpost and take them all out one by one?
No, yes. You need to know which Far Cry.
Is it Far Cry 3?
Yes, it is. The 20th question.
There we go.
Yeah, I'm sure there's some half-baked multiplayer mode that they added.
Well, it took us 40 questions, but we got an answer.
You didn't even look it up? I don't think they came.
The multiplayer part?
Yeah, it's like... it's
Far Cry 3.
Yeah, what is the multiplayer?
Massive Entertainment handled the game's multiplayer. It's like there's a PvE and a cooperative mode. I don't know. It's hard to find the details on it.
I need to start tweaking that question because that definitely threw me off. Like, shooters?
I think we offline talked about that too. I think that's like a good idea.
Got to fine tune it. Yeah. Cram as many details in there as possible.
I don't know if you guys know this, but we have pre-planning meetings quarterly for the best questions to choose. And, you know,
we reconvene.
It's been a while, right? I think ours is coming up in September. So we'll be
there. When you type in Far Cry 3 multiplayer into Google, you get IGN.com with an extensive multiplayer guide. We have maps and all the different modes and loadouts.
Yeah, where were you then, Sam?
I didn't write it.
It's okay. We'll work in our post-mort for this episode. We'll workshop where everything went wrong.
Okay.
In 20 questions.
Multiplayer. We got it right.
Yeah, we got there in the end with not too many questions to spare.
He had to tell us it was easy. Several times.
So can Kevin O at you or not, Sam?
Yes, he can.
Yeah. Okay. All right.
He can only at half of us because we got.
And
one
I got added last week. Did you guys? I don't know if he tagged everybody in it.
No, I don't think I saw it.
He sent me his favorite scene from episode 2, Attack of the Clones, and I had to comment on it, which was great.
Is his favorite scene? I hate sand.
No, that's my favorite scene. It was when Anakin gets all chopped up.
Well, that's in Revenge of the Sith. Anyway.
Oh, sorry. I meant Revenge of the Sith. No, I can't remember now.
Anyway, thank you for the suggestion, Kevin O. Remember, you can always send your suggestions to me at the email address, gamescoop@ign.com. That is all the scoops we have for you this week. Thank you to Justin, Tina, and Sam. My name is Damon. This is IGN Gamescoop, and we're out.
Hey there, this is Justin Bartha. I made a funny new podcast, King of the Egg Cream. It has the greatest cast in the history of podcasts with actors like Louis Black.
I'm torn by my feelings for two women.
Bobby Cannavale.
You can eat it, or if someone hits you, you can put it on your cut.
Melanie Lynskey.
I wonder what these marvelous things are that look just like boiled chicken feet.
Jason Ritter.
I can break things and pick locks and kill people.
Michael Stuhlbarg.
The whole point is to inspire people that they should make themselves better.
Ari Grainer.
No, don't whet its appetite. What are you, an idiot?
Me, Justin Bartha.
That's not just any egg cream, that's a Lemke's special.
And all narrated by the hilarious Richard Kind.
This is the story of Harry Dalowitz. And how he rose from nothing to become New York's King of the Egg Cream.
So if you like funny true stories, come listen to King of the Egg Cream, available wherever you get your podcasts.